Football.
It's the football, 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 and sometimes other sports show. Here's your host, AJ Nicoletti.
What up? FFFSOSS.com. At FFFSOSS, Twitter, Instagram. Twitch.tv/AJNic3. What's good? A big edition of the pod on this Thursday ahead of the Sweet 16 Elite 8 weekend. We got a NCAA tournament Sweet 16 upset meter. So that's what we'll do in the kickoff. I ranked the matchups in the Sweet 16 in some levels, so I'll explain the levels. And that's what we'll do in the kickoff. Then we will have a full March Madness Sweet 16 and Elite 8 preview. We'll go through all the Sweet 16 games, how I see them playing out, the key players, the key matchups, and then look at and all four matchups, what each one in the Elite 8 and the regional finals could be. So we'll do that. And then footy is back this weekend, folks. A weekend soccer preview, gigantic game in the Prem, with Man City hosting Arsenal on Sunday, Easter Sunday. Happy Easter, everybody out there, ahead of the holiday on Sunday. It's coming out on Holy Thursday. You get Last Supper, then you got Good Friday, and then Easter. So everybody, happy Easter. Just the people celebrating out there. So we have that on Sunday with a weekend soccer preview, and then we got some NFL rule changes I want to touch on, so we'll do that, and then PGA Tour, it's the Houston Open, right? Yes, the Houston Open, not a bad field, so that will be at the end of the show. So NCAA Tournament Sweet 16 upset meter in the kickoff, then our March Madness Sweet 16 Elite 8 previews, weekend soccer preview, NFL rule changes, PGA Tour at the end of the program. So let's kick it off, Sweet 16 upset meter, 2008. The only year where all 4-1 seeds were in the Final Four representative of their region. So, you probably see one or two of the 1 seeds going out this weekend because in the history of this tournament, it's only happened once. Now, these 4-1 seeds could hold on, and we could have it here in Phoenix. But just remember, in the history of this tournament, it has only happened one time. One time that all 4-1 seeds have made it to the Final Four. So, the upset meter will start low and will go to high. The 5 categories I made are won't happen. 4 categories, sorry, I've counted wrong. Won't happen, could happen, might happen, will happen. So those are the 4 categories for our 8 matchups in the Sweet 16. Won't happen, could happen, might happen, will happen, right? So low to high, we'll start in what happened. San Diego State, UConn. UConn is winning the national championship. I'm not afraid to say it. They're the best team. They're the best coach team. They're the most complete team. They have a ton of experience from last year's run of winning a national championship. And I understand that at one point they're going to play a close game. Sure. But I trust their coach. And you're acting like, well, they haven't played a close game. They practice the game situations. You don't think they're practicing that every day in practice, late game, late clock situations? Come on. So I don't get that argument to me. Now we're knocking them for strangling teams and separating themselves. Like, that's what we're doing with UConn. So, come on now. So, UConn is beating San Diego State. No knock to San Diego State. No knock to Coach Dutcher and Lede. We'll touch on that game, obviously, as we preview the Sweet 16. But for me, this is a won't happen. UConn in the Elite Eight. So, go to could happen. And I'm only putting these... I'm putting this matchup specifically in could happen because Marquette, specifically Shaka Smart, up until this year has had trouble in this tournament besides that big run that he went on with VCU originally, right? Marquette against this NC State team that has just won 7 in a row in the postseason here. Like, just, phew, just like that. Ripped off 7 in a row in their ACC and now the 2 games last weekend. Burns against Igadario is an interesting matchup. Can he handle him? That is a really interesting game. And I think NC State, if they play their game and everything goes right and Marquette struggles, that could happen. Now, I had this in between won't happen and could happen. I couldn't figure out another phrase to put in there. But I put NC State Marquette in could happen. Now, Clemson Arizona is in could happen because if Clemson slows that game down and frustrates Arizona, they could win a rock fight or a low-scoring game or a one-possession game that they steal. So I think Arizona wins the game, and I think if it's played at Arizona's pace, it could get ugly possibly because there is, you know, usually one or two blowouts in the Sweet 16. But if Clemson can slow it down, they have a chance to upset Arizona. So that's why I put it in could happen. Now let's get to might happen. And I almost put Duke Houston in could happen, but I want to give Duke a little more respect because if McCain comes out and shoots it well and he's supported by the other guys who's shooting it well, whether it's Proctor or Roach or somebody else is making some threes, maybe Filipowski fills it up a little bit from the on the arc. But if Duke shoots it, they can outscore Houston going away because if Houston gets into foul trouble, like we've seen them get into foul trouble, specifically last game against A&M where a bunch of their guys fouled out, including the three big guards that they need to play in these games, right? If Cryer or Shed or the youngster Sharp, if any of those three guys struggle and Duke is shooting it well and Houston can't keep up, well, it's great that Houston plays awesome defense, but if Duke is making tough shots and making threes, what are you going to do? So Duke has a formula to upset Houston, and that's why I put it in the might happen. Now, Alabama-Carolina, when we touch on this game a little bit late, I think it might be first to 90 because I don't think 85 is enough. I really don't. Carolina does not really turn the ball over, or they don't really force turnovers on defense, and Bama is sometimes victim of giving the ball up, so that's an interesting who's going to break there? Is Bama going to continue to turn the ball over? Is Carolina just not going to play any defense? So that game, whoever shoots it better, whoever plays some semblance of defense, whether it's getting or making sure you're rebounding the ball defensively or just making it hard on the opposition guards or the opposition bigs to not get such easy looks and easy shots and easy makes and easy buckets, because that game, again, I would not, like, what's the total there? It's got to be close to 180. I really wouldn't be shocked. Let's look. Let's look right now because I haven't looked yet. 173.5. It could have been higher, to be fair. So, Bama, if Sears goes nuts and shoots it and R.J. Davis doesn't, guess what? Bama might beat them. So, Bama, UNC, it's in the might category. Gonzaga, Purdue. I think Gonzaga is going to benefit from handling and playing Edie early in the year. Now, I understand Purdue won that game and they played better, and EK wasn't really ready for it coming in, transferring from Wyoming. But guess what? They have film on him. They've seen how he's going to be officiated in this tournament because it was different from how he's officiated in conference versus out of conference at some tournaments and some regular games. So, Edie, it seems like he's going to get a consistent whistle here in this NCAA tournament. And now Gonzaga not only knows that, but they also have played him before. So Gonzaga, if they frustrate the guards, if they have Edie score 60, you know, I don't think he can. You know, yeah, he could get his 30 and 20. But if you say, okay, dump it down to him every possession, play him straight up, and we're going to score two. We'll see what happens. I wonder. I saw Rothstein call him Yao. That's interesting. I'll give Rothstein a little bit credit there. He does have a similar game to Yao. Yao had a better jumper. Yao had a great jumper. People forget how great a jumper Yao had. But I think Gonzaga, again, having the experience of going up against Edie this year and having two games in this tournament to watch him be officiated, Mark Few is going to have a game plan against Painter's big. So we'll see. I think Gonzaga might be able to beat Purdue. And then I got two in the will happen. And you could say, well, AJ, we know that you hate Tennessee, so obviously Tennessee was going to be here with Creighton. But Iowa State to me, yes, they've beaten Houston twice. But it's not like they shot the lights out. They just won a rock fight. And they play great defense, which is fine. But guess what Illinois does? Score the basketball. So that's another pace game. Very similar to Clemson, Arizona. If it's played at Illinois' pace, good luck Iowa State keeping up. And if it's played at Iowa State's pace, Illinois can still sneak out that win. And like Illinois, I think, can win at Iowa State's pace. Can Iowa State win at Illinois' pace? No. So that's why I think that game will happen. Illinois can win that game more ways than Iowa State can. And Creighton, I don't think Tennessee has an answer for Kalkbrenner. And I think Creighton's mixture of scorers, they kind of all do it in different ways. Shireman's a shooter. Ashworth can shoot it a little bit, but he's able to get inside, and he's a good passer. And Alexander's a mid-range killer, a driver, and a slasher. And Kalkbrenner can step out a little bit, but he's going to be that post guy. And he's also a good passer out of the high post and low post. So Creighton can attack you in a multitude of ways, as can Tennessee, to be fair. But Tennessee clearly goes through Connect. So Alexander or Shot, who's ever on him, oh boy, that's a big matchup. And I think Creighton will be able to cause more issues and ask more questions of Tennessee than Tennessee will do of Creighton. So I think that's why Creighton, that upset will happen. So won't happen, UConn, San Diego State. Could happen, NC State over Marquette, Clemson over Arizona. Might happen if Duke shoots the lights out, they beat Houston. Alabama and UNC, first to 90, right? Gonzaga, Purdue could happen as well. Creighton, Tennessee will happen. Illinois, Iowa State will happen. So that's my little upset meter for our Sweet 16. So let's preview the games. Let's do a little bit of a deeper dive. We start in the East with San Diego State, UConn. It's a rematch of last year's national championship game. And San Diego State has some of the guys back, but they obviously don't have the big guys back. But for Coach Lutcher, it's Lidé. He's the big scorer for them. He makes it all go. Parrish, Butler, they're near 10 a game. Trammell and Powell are the other starters. They got Waters, who gives them about 10 a game off the bench, and Sanders is a rotation player as well. So those are the guys that are going to have to deal with UConn, and UConn come at you in waves. And yes, their starting five is their starting five, but they also have Diarra and Johnson have all helped them off the bench. But Klingon, Caravan, Newton, Spencer, Castle, all double figures, all awesome starters, and didn't have to play the high-level minutes that maybe you would have thought they would have had to play against Northwestern. Yes, they played some minutes. You know, they didn't put them away by 40, right? So they had to come back in the game, but it wasn't a full 38, a full 40, you know? So I think UConn, like I said earlier, wins the national championship. So they're obviously winning this game, in my opinion. So throw it into Klingon. Spencer coming off screens. Castle being able to be like a fourth option as a scorer, even. Caravan, a fourth or fifth option. And I think Newton does such a great job of playing with pace, knowing when to slow it down, knowing when it's his time to shoot a big three, knowing when he's got to get it to Spencer because Spencer hasn't been involved, or Spencer's been involved and you got to find him again. Caravan hasn't had a layup or a touch, so you got to give him the ball. Make sure we get clinging. Like, Newton does it all, and he's a great defender. Tristan Newton's one of my favorite players in the country. He would be all AJ team if I did it again this year. Maybe I'll do it after the tournament. But I forgot to do that. Newton makes that team go. Castle's not a freshman anymore. Spencer has just been an awesome addition. You know, with some of the things that they lost last year in Calcaterra shooting, they bring in with Spencer. Klingon gets better and better every game. He's defending without fouling. I mean, he does everything. So UConn, to me, it's a tough matchup for San Diego State because they're not able to. Yeah, they have guys that get 10 a game, and they have guys that could shoot a little bit, but they're really going to go to one guy in every big spot, and it's Lidé. And UConn just scores and scores. So UConn in that match. Illinois, Iowa State, offense versus defense. Illinois with Coach Underwood. Shannon's getting 23 games. DeMass gets 16. Hawkins gets 12. Guerrero gets 10. Rogers is the other starter. And then Danja, the big off the bench. Harmon and Goody come off the bench as well. For Iowa State, Lipsy, Gilbert, Mamasilvic are double figures. King gets 9. Robert Jones is the fifth starter. And then Curtis Jones, no relation to the Liverpool player, comes off the bench. He gets 10 a game. And yet Ward and Watson also in the rotation getting minutes. So this game, to me, guards for Iowa State being able to guard Damask and Shannon. And then Illinois, they take a lot of threes. If they're making them, Iowa State's got to play really, really good efficient offense. Because I've talked about it really all year. I've talked about it when I mentioned Iowa State. They're a great team, but they could go scoreless for 6 to 8 minutes. You've seen it. 5 minutes plus, multiple media timeouts. Like, in games here, in half. So you cannot do that in the NCAA tournament. You cannot do it in the Sweet 16. I think Illinois, and I understand they haven't defended all year, and you'd be like, well, they haven't defended. How are you going to say they're going to defend now? I don't think they're going to defend a ton. I just think Iowa State just misses a lot of shots over spurts of these halves. And you have to factor that in. And if that's happening, and Shannon goes crazy with three threes and a dunk and a handoff dunk to Hawkins, and it's a 13-0 run, and you're like, what the hell was that? And you go from up one to down 12. What the hell just happened, right? So, like, I think Illinois' firepower is what this game is going to come down to. Because Iowa State can play great defense. That's fantastic. But I don't think you're holding Illinois to, like, 50 points. They're going to at least get to 65-70. And that would still be a good defensive effort for Iowa State if they win a game 72-70. But I don't think they're going to win this game 65-60. Illinois just goes up and down and score. And Shannon is so, he's a pro at this point. He's played a lot of NCAA tournament games. He scored a lot of buckets in this tournament. He's a pro at this point. So, Illinois to me, and I understand defense wins championships. All the time, offense versus defense. Everybody picks offense, and the defense always wins. I think it's just a little different here because Iowa State is just defense. I do not trust their offense in the slightest. And I think they're going to have to score more than 70-plus here, maybe 75-plus. I don't see that happening. Give me Illinois. So I have UConn-Illinois, and it will be an interesting matchup because Illinois could give UConn problems if they hit their shots and Shannon goes crazy, but UConn is just too much. And I think UConn beats Iowa State. If San Diego State were to beat UConn, I think they would lose to Iowa State or Illinois. Just because coming off beating UConn, I don't think they would be able to match it 2 days later, a day later or whatever, to get back up again. So that UConn-Illinois game, I think we get an awesome game there. I think we get a high-scoring game that comes down to UConn getting the stops. Because I think what UConn can do that Iowa State can't do, score the basketball. So I think that's how UConn would win in the East. So I have UConn coming out of Boston to represent the East going to Phoenix. How about the West? Clemson, Arizona. I think it's a fair, it's a good draw for Arizona. If they run, they win. Clemson has to slow it down, what I alluded to in the kickoff, because I think if Clemson wants to get in a track meet, that's the wrong decision because Clemson doesn't have the deepest rotation right now. I know Hunter's playing better. Hall's been good. Gerard hasn't shot it necessarily well, but he'll be better. Shiflin's had a good tournament. And then you got Clark, Godfrey, Wiggins getting the other minutes. For Arizona, it's five starters over 11 points in Caleb Love, Larson, Ballo, and Keshawn Johnson. Boswell gets 9. You got Bradley, Lewis, Crevis possibly off the bench, the backup center for Ballo. Bradley's already bailed him out. He took over the Dayton game. He had a big game in the Dayton game. Boswell hasn't necessarily played well. Early on in the season, I said, this Arizona team is really, really good. I love Boswell. Him and Caleb Love as a combination is excellent. Boswell hasn't really held up his bargain after I was talking big about him early in the season, okay? That being said, Arizona is too talented. I'm not trying to knock Clemson. They beat a really good Baylor team, but they didn't shoot it well. And Baylor's always playing from behind. Give Clemson credit, but story of that game is a little different than a back-and-forth kind of contest, to be fair. Now, this game, Arizona, I don't know how you're going to guard Love. And Gerard, as great of a shooter as he is, as funny as he doesn't play a lot of defense. And I'm not saying he doesn't try, because defense is a lot of effort, but he's just overmatched. Like, if he gets switched on Boswell, or if, God forbid, he gets switched on Caleb Love, Caleb Love's going to cook. Come on. That's not fair to Joe. Come on. I'm not trying to knock Joe. And people, I had Joe, we had Joe on M&A, me and Moose. Like, we love Joe. Like, I love Joe. I think he's fantastic. I'm glad it's working out for him after transferring to Cuse to Clemson, and he's wearing orange again. He's in the NCAA tournament. Give the kid a ton of credit, right? That doesn't mean I can't say he's not the great defender. So if he gets switched on Caleb Love, God bless, good night. Put the bucket on the board. So Love, Larson, Balo, Johnson, Boswell, that's a really, really good five. And though the Clemson five, I think, has played really good this weekend and previously in the non-conference, I highlighted them when we were still talking about, you know, football and moving over to college basketball. I was like, that Clemson team, I know they're not having a great ACC season, but they had a great out-of-league, non-league conference. But I think they run out here. Arizona, I told you they were the best team in the West. I think they solidify it by at least getting to an Elite Eight. So give me Arizona. And then Alabama, Carolina, I said it first to 90. I truly believe it is first to 90, maybe even first to 95. 90 might not be enough because Carolina plays no defense. They don't get turnovers. And Bama, we know, does not play a ton of defense. They're bragging about playing defense in the first round. They gave up 90 to Charleston. I know Charleston's good and they shoot it fine. But then against Grand Canyon, they finally shut them down at the end of the game. But before that, they were scoring with them. So I like Oates. I like Bama. I got no issue with Bama. But to tell me that they play a little bit better defense, what are we talking about? Come on now. But this is a really interesting matchup. You have Davis, Baycott, Ingram, Ryan, Cadeau, the freshmen, the starters. Trimble and Withers come off the bench and play major minutes for UNC. So it's not the deepest UNC team. And I think for Nate Oates, you got to figure out if Reitzel's ready to go, because he keep him in the starting lineup, but you run the guards out there. Sears, Estrada, Nelson, Griffin. You got Pringle. Diabate had a big game the other night. Walters also off the bench. So Pringle, Diabate, Walters probably off the bench. Sears, Estrada, Nelson, Griffin. And if Reitzel can go, he will be a starter, as we know. So him being out, I think, affected the Grand Canyon game, but Bama was still able to pull away and win and play some good defense down the stretch. To be fair to them, I will give them the credit when they played some good defense down the stretch of one game. To say, they're starting to defend, look at those two rounds. You gave up 90-plus in the front. What are we talking about? So I think this is a big spot for Bama because, you know, previously they had a higher seed. Previously they had the pressure. Carolina has the pressure here. Carolina's supposed to win this game. And I don't think this is a national championship Carolina team. I think they were lucky to get the fourth one seed because we had the clear three number ones and it was a couple teams for that final one. And you said, all right, give it to Carolina, you know. For me, it was Arizona, but that's another story for another day. And I think if we get Carolina, Arizona, I think Arizona still wins that game. But I think Bama is going to beat Carolina. I think for some reason, it's not a Carolina national championship team. It's not a Carolina Final Four team. Yeah, Baycott and Davis are talented for sure, but I don't, like, Ingram made a bunch of threes the other night. I don't think he does that again. Cadeau has shown you that he's not consistent enough for the big moment yet. He's in the commercials. That's great. NIL, congratulations. Make some money. But are you ready for the big spot to be in the commercial yet? And I think Bama, they don't have the pressure here. They got to another Sweet 16. Yes, you want to win a national championship for sure. But now they're playing against a higher seed. And if they lost, there's nothing to not be proud about. So I think they'll play a little looser. I think Carolina might play a little tighter. It's out west. You're going to be a lot of Arizona fans in the building. So I don't know. Like, Carolina travels, we know that. Bama basketball, does it travel as Bama football? We don't know. We'll see. We know there's going to be Carolina fans, but there's going to be a lot of Arizona fans. A lot of Arizona fans. So I wonder if they stick around for that one. So I think it's Bama-Arizona. I have Arizona winning that game. But you could have UNC-Arizona. You could have UNC-Clemson, which would be ACC, which would be crazy. And you could have Bama-Clemson, which would be a particularly familiar football matchup, but not necessarily a basketball matchup. So I think any of those games besides the Clemson ones are necessarily exciting. Like, if you get Arizona-UNC, that's a great game. And if you get Bama-Arizona, I think that's a great game too. I really, like, as long as Clemson doesn't win, you get a great game there. No offense to my Clemson people. I'm sorry. I know I got Clemson people in my audience. I know some of you might have just shut that off, so you didn't want to hear me apologize right now. But I think you would agree with me at some point if it wasn't your team. I'm sorry. All right, let's go to the South. NC State, Marquette. NC State, I think, has to keep this close. I don't think they can get it to 10 or 12 and come back. I think Marquette would be able to pull away at that point. They'd be able to play their style and get good shots offensively and then really just play high-level energy defense and get those tips, get those deflections, get those steals, make sure they get those rebounds and not give up offensive opportunities, second opportunities. So I think Marquette, if they can get some distance early, good night. I don't think NC State's going to be able to rally from, 15 down in a big... I don't think so, because I think at some point you get outmatched, at some point you get outclassed, and that's nothing to sneeze at in the NCAA tournament, to be fair. But I think NC State really has to keep this close, and Burns, you've seen him in some stretches like, hey, he's gassed. We got to wait for him to get in the block, and then you throw it to him, he's like, not yet. Like, well, we got to throw it to you right now. The clock's running down. You got to make a move. All right, well, here we go. So you might not get a great shot. So Horn's got to score. Marcel's got to score. Tiara's been better scoring, but he hasn't been consistent all year, so that's different. O'Connell, the former Stanford guard, I've always had an affinity for. I've always thought he's a good point guard. And then... So Horn, Burns, Marcel, Diarra, O'Connell, their stars. You got Taylor. He gets 11 off the bench. Middlebrooks has been a scorer of late, coming off the bench as well. And then they're going against the Marquette squad. Kolick, the former player of the year in the Big East Conference. Jones has had a really good scoring run in the absence of Kolick, and now he's not getting the best defender on him as a guard, so he's scoring a little bit easier, I guess. Igadario is going to have to be big. Joplin's going to have to be big. Mitchell gets about 8, and then you got Ross and Gold coming off the bench for Shaka. So if this game is within 5, NC State could absolutely steal it at the under 4. They gotta be within 2 possessions at the under 4. If they're not within 2 possessions at the under 4, Marquette will so slowly squeeze the life out of this game. Duke, Houston. Duke makes 3s, they win. They don't shoot it well, Houston wins. This game is very simple, because if Duke hits their 3s, I don't think Houston can get to a number that Duke can in that type of game. Now, if it's a game that Duke makes a few 3s here and there, Houston can still outscore them. But if Duke makes no 3s, they ain't winning a rock fight. Houston loves that game. So that's the kind of speed of this game. If Duke makes a majority of their 3s, they shoot a great percentage. Good night, the lights. Houston can't catch up. If Duke makes a few 3s here and there, Houston can still score and win that game. But if Duke makes very few 3s and they're not shooting it well, Houston will suffocate that Duke offense. So that's the story of this game. For Coach Shire, he's got to have Filipowski make a couple 3s. He's got to get Roach. McCain should have saved some. I don't know what he's doing celebrating an 8th or how many ever 3s he made the other night. He's screaming. Relax. Got a long way to go, son. Roach's finger is a concern, I'm sure. Mitchell's been good. Proctor's been good. But you got Stewart and Young off the bench. But it's really those five guys. Filipowski, Roach, McCain, Mitchell, Proctor. If Shire could play him for all 40, I think he would. And then Houston's going to have to deal with coming off a really interesting whistle in their game against A&M in that round of 32 win in overtime. They had four guys foul out. Three big guards, Cryer, Shedd, and Sharp, all fouled out. You can't have that happen. Robertson Francis are the other starters. Dunn gets about seven off the bench. Wilson's also in the rotation off the bench, but it's really about those three guards. So you got Cryer, Shedd, Sharp versus what, Roach, McCain, and Proctor. So those are some fun guard matchups. And I think since Duke made a lot of threes the other night against James Madison, I don't think they make a lot of threes against Houston. I think Houston finds themselves in another Elite Eight. So I think they play Marquette. That'll be a really great game. Marquette will have the opportunity to steal that game because Marquette can play a Big 12 style of basketball. They're not afraid of that. Big East is tough style basketball. Like that's a very, you know, similar style, to be fair. You get a couple rock fights in both conferences. That's what we know. So I think it's a good game either way. I think Houston NC State necessarily is not a good game because I don't think at some point NC State's going to run out of gas. I think Duke Marquette is a really interesting game for either Shire or Shock. Shire to get to a first Final Four, Shaka to get back, this time with Marquette. That'd be a hell of a storyline. And then Duke NC State, where we could have UNC Clemson in the other bracket. You could have a couple ACC Elite Eights here to get an ACC team in the Final Four, but I just don't see NC State being able to beat Marquette unless they're leading or within those couple possessions down the stretch. I just think Marquette will be able to stretch that game out. So those are the matchups there. Finally, we go to the Midwest. Gonzaga, Purdue. Can the Zags defend Edey in this Maui rematch? I know it was Maui, Hawaii, fine. Edey is amazing. He's been pretty good this tournament. I'm concerned about Lawyer, Smith, and Jones because in some instances they have not been able to get him the ball in the post where he's wanted it or when he's wanted it in the clock. So I'm concerned about that. If Gonzaga's able to deny entry passes and make it hard and make it tough catches and have him, you know, having to rush his moves instead of being patient with his moves, I think that could change the game in favor of Gonzaga. So their ability to defend the entry passes when they double, when they don't double, they got to be disciplined. And again, with the whistle, with the Edey matchups, it's very difficult to whistle a 7-footer because they're getting smacked and slapped every time. And like, you can't call every foul, but also you got to call the ones that are very obvious. So I think it's tough to officiate, and I think it's tough to play against, that's for sure. But, like, if you had a 7-4 guy, you'd be asking for calls, too. So I think it's just, like, that's just ball. Like, I don't know. I don't love people going after him being like, well, he gets every call. Yo, look at his arm. He's got that scratch on his, like, his left shoulder. Like, somebody took, like, a piece out of him this year. Like, what are we doing? He looks like a Holyfield after the Tyson fight sometimes. Like, what are we talking about? So Kaufman Wren has jumped into that other starter role, and Gillis comes off the bench now. Colvin's the other guard off the bench. But that's the situation with Purdue. Now for Gonzaga, Watson has really emerged as the guy. Hickman's had a good season. Nembhard's been the good guard in his brother's absence, I guess you could say. EK and Greg are the other stars. You got Huff and Stromer off the bench. If Stromer can get it going, he's a guy that can shoot it off the bench. That's for sure. So this is a really interesting matchup, and I think the key is Edey. If Gonzaga says, hey, let him score 60, and we'll just cover everybody else, and we'll score 65, and that's it. Like, I could see that happening. Like, why not try something? Because if you just, like, double team him constantly and then they kick it out for three and then he gets an offensive rebound if it misses and then they make the three, you're just going to be so pissed that you just said, We could have just gave up two, not fouled or not had that momentum offensive rebound thing, and then not have that three go against us, but we did it anyway. So I think you have to be creative in the way you're going to play Edie, and also I think you have to switch up your coverages, because if you just give him one look, like, even though I'm saying, like, just let him score 60, like, obviously I don't mean just let him score 60, like, I have a little bit of brevity. I don't know what word I'm looking for there, but if you say, we're going to take away everything else, and if he just turns over his shoulder and makes 30 jump hooks, fine. I think that's a way to play it and at least see how a half goes. Because if you keep doubling and you keep rotating and Lawyer makes a corner three and he looks at your bench like, you're going to leave me open all night, that's a dumb decision. And you're Mark Few, you're like, that is a dumb decision. I think the Zags can win this game. They need to shoot it like they shot it against Kansas in that second half. They shot it so well in that game. And Kansas didn't shoot it particularly well, for sure, as we know. And what did they go on? Was it 15-0 or 17-0 run? And then like 33-3 or something crazy. 23-3. Gonzaga can score and put it up. They need that type of game because Purdue is going to be able to score. But I think Purdue will just be a little too much for Gonzaga. And then Creighton, Tennessee. Can Tennessee finally get to an Elite Eight with Barnes and this crew? No, because I don't think they have an answer for Kalkbrenner. And how I kind of detailed a little earlier in the show, in the kickoff, all the scorers for Creighton kind of do something different. Kalkbrenner's the big. Alexander has a mid-range. Shireman's a shooter. Ashworth does a lot of things as a small guard. So, like, you have Miller, the other starter. He's a role player. Farabello and Green come off the bench. And, yeah, you know the four guys are going to score against you, but they all do it in different ways. And Tennessee has really relied on Connect, and he didn't shoot it well, and they probably should have lost to Texas. They're fortunate that they won, and give them credit for winning. I'm not going to knock them for getting to a Sweet 16, give them credit, but they're fortunate, and Vescovi is stunk. Ziegler hasn't been good. Triple J hasn't been good. Adu's been all right, but it's really been the Connect show. And if he's not playing well, they're completely beatable. And I think Creighton's going to be able to defend him and say, one of the other guys beat us, because none of the other guys have had the big success in this tournament. I mean, they lost that, and again, I'm not trying to knock FAU, but they lost FAU last year as a 9 seed. Now, obviously, we know they were underseeded, sure, but they lost to FAU when they should have won the game. After they beaten Duke and beat up on Duke. Remember that. They beat up on Duke. And they were like, here we come, Tennessee. Pfft. Lose to FAU, please. So I got Purdue-Creighton here because I think Creighton is going to take it to Tennessee. I really do. I really don't think that's necessarily a game, because I think Creighton's going to be able to defend, connect. So I got Purdue-Creighton in that regional final. And Edie versus Kalkbrenner, sign me up, box office. Because Creighton could steal that game. Because I could see Creighton's supporting cast and Shireman, Alexander, and Ashworth being better than the guards and Kaufman, Wren, and Gillis of Purdue. So Creighton could absolutely get to this Final Four if they get past Tennessee. And they'll have all the confidence in the world, because they have a big that can match up. A lot of teams don't have a guy that's 7 feet that you could at least throw at him, Edie. And Kalkbrenner's probably the second best 7-footer in college. Balo's good for sure. There's a bunch of bigs I'm probably forgetting off the top of my head, but Edie and Kalkbrenner are really good bigs. And that'll be a hell of a matchup in a regional final. Now, could it be Purdue-Tennessee? For sure. It could be. And I think Tennessee would run into a problem of, how are you going to defend Edie? I don't think they would do well there. I really don't think they would do well there. Gonzaga-Tennessee could be an interesting matchup. Gonzaga-Creighton would be a really fun game as well. A really fun game as well. All right, so that's our Sweet 16 and Elite 8 previews. Let's go to some footy, a weekend soccer preview, starting the EPL. Newcastle, West Ham. West Ham have gotten a little bit together after Paqueta came back. Newcastle have had a season where injuries have really, really hurt them. They have not had their full best 11 available for Eddie Howe. It really seems all season, to be fair, between, you know, Callum Wilson missing games, Isak being hurt, you know, Anthony Gordon's been hurt but playing, Almiron's been hurt but playing. The guys in the mid, they've had to play Miley, the kid, for almost every game. You get Tonali suspended. Guimaraes has been hurt. We know they've had injuries on the back line, even though they have a good back line. Trippier's a main cog for them. He's been hurt. So Newcastle have a ton of excuses, to be fair, but they don't want to hear it at St. James Park. They want to have, you know, they want to get 3 points. And I think this could be a really interesting match. Coming out of an international break, could get a lot of goals in this one. I think it could be high-flying. It could be an exciting game. Give me 2-2. Tottenham-Luton. Tottenham have a chance to catch Villa and have a really, really good season with Ange year one, because I don't think a lot of people expected them to be in the top four conversation, let alone get the spot. Especially with the rise in Arsenal the last few years. Liverpool is going to be contending this year. I don't think people thought Liverpool would be trying to win a title. Obviously, you have Man City. I think teams, people thought United would be better, even though United's, you know, they could argue they're in contention for top four. Newcastle, a lot of people thought would be better. They're not. So Tottenham have an opportunity here to say, okay, let's seize it, because Villa have kept this race open. And we're in it. So Tottenham, after going to Villa Park and then they lose 3-0 Fulham, if I'm not mistaken. Yes. Now you're home against Luton. Luton have played teams really tough. Give Luton credit. But you got to find a way to win that game and get 3 points. Sheffield United, Fulham. Speaking of Fulham, had a lot of good results recently. Munoz has come into the side and scored goals, with Raul not really getting on the score sheet a ton. Sheffield United are going down. They're just not a good enough side in the Prem. So give me Fulham to have another big result there. Forest Crystal Palace. Forest suffering points deduction drags them into the relegation fight. So it seems like it's getting to be 3 to 4 teams for one spot. We know Sheffield are probably going to go down. We know Burnley are going to go down. You got either Luton, Forest, Everton. I think a lot of people might mention Crystal Palace in that relegation fight, unfortunately for them. So this is an interesting match. And Crystal Palace, again, I bring it up every time I talk. If Olise and Eze play, they're a different team. They're a different side. They're a different club. The creativity is there. The goal threat is there. The sensational play is possibly there. Until they're fit and healthy, that's a big issue for them. And Forest are going to be galvanized by the Prem making their decision with the points deduction. So I'll take Forest to get a big result. Chelsea-Burnley. Chelsea, I think, are finding a little bit of confidence, whether it's Cole Palmer bringing it to the side, whether it's Caicedo settling in a little bit more besides Enzo, and Enzo's been better. Defensively, they've been a little bit better, but they've had the issues with the goalkeepers being injured. You go against Burnley, win the match, okay? Win the match at Stamford Bridge. Keep a clean sheet. Win it 2-0, 3-0, and have your fans have a nice day at your park. Bournemouth-Everton. Bournemouth coming alive a little bit. Everton, they're in trouble. Calvert-Lewin has not been good. And if you've listened to the show, like, I've been a big Calvert-Lewin fan. I think he's one of the bright spots for Everton in this run where they've been struggling, you know, the last few years with staying up and fighting to possibly the last day or the second to last match day with some big results. So Calvert-Lewin's been the talisman, and he has just not been scoring goals when he's in there. And yes, he's had injury problems, and to be fair to him, when he gets fit as soon as possible and he gets back into the side, but he's not been able to score the goals that the Toffees have needed him to do. So Bournemouth, that's a tough one, and Solanke's been scoring, and Semedo's been scoring for Bournemouth, so Bournemouth are not in bad form. Give me Bournemouth. Villa Wolves. Gary O'Neill's done a great job with Wolves. Wolves continue to sell players and lose players, and players get hurt for them. Like, that manager's done an excellent job. I think a lot of teams should not have, you know, let him go, and here he is. But here's Unai Emery's Villa team at Villa Park. They have to get right. He has options. He has players, you know, Bailey, Diaby, Watkins. They can all score. He has a good midfield. You know, Douglas Luiz and some of those other guys. So, like, I just... Villa, you got to find a way to win because Tottenham's going to start breathing down your neck again. And you, if you get top four, that's gigantic for you. Champions League football at Villa Park. Come on, what are we talking about? Brentford, Man U up next. Listen, Man U better be all hands on deck because I know they're coming off the Liverpool win and they're all fired up about it, that they, you know, put a big dent in one of their rivals' seasons, for sure. And they should be very proud of that. That's a good win. But now, you got to get back into the top four contention. So you got to win out. And you better go get that FA Cup trophy. Because the way you celebrated, seems like you almost already won it. And I understand you drew Coventry City. You better drill them. Because God forbid that goes to nil-nil or Pens. And you did all that celebrating just to get knocked out by, that's, I don't know. I don't know, Man U fans. I don't know. I don't know. But Brentford, I know Tony hasn't been great since coming back, but in Mbeumo Wissa, when they get healthy and they have, they're playing their style, like, look out. So Brentford could absolutely turn up and beat Man U at home. You got matches on Easter Sunday, Liverpool against Brighton. Brighton, unfortunately, have not had the season they've wanted. They've lost Mitoma now between the Asia Cup and now the injury. So they've had injuries. De Zerbi's had to move on from players like Caicedo and Enzo Fernandez, and obviously even Graham Potter has sold a bunch of players from that team. Basuma, Cucurella, like a bunch of guys have moved on from Brighton to other Premier League teams and other bad teams. So they're not having the best season. Still trying to finish top half. Liverpool fighting for everything, fighting for their lives for another Premier League in Klopp's last season. And I think Brighton will give them hell. De Zerbi plays well, and Brighton play really well against Liverpool. So McAllister against his former team. Who is the Liverpool 11? How health, like, is anybody fit that's trying to come back? I think you got to answer a lot of questions for this Premier League run-in for Liverpool. And it starts with Brighton at home at Anfield. And then the big one, one versus three technically with Liverpool in between them in the table. Man City 3 hosting Arsenal 1. The champions hosting the team on top of the table right now. And Arsenal had beaten them at the Emirates earlier in the season. So Pep is looking to pay back his former assistant in Mikel Arteta. Big game, big matchup. Big players, big managers, gigantic occasion on Easter Sunday in the Prem. Liverpool will have just played, and they're going to be cheering for a draw in this next, in that one. And then we'll be back in Liverpool's hands, if I'm not mistaken. So, De Bruyne is fit. Haaland is fit. Most of the City guys are fit, I'd say, besides Grealish, I'm pretty sure, right? And Nunez broke his finger, but I think he's fine. Walker got banged up on international duty, as did John Stones, so I think their status is up in the air. And Arsenal are getting players back, especially on their back line. So I think Arteta will have a lot of options to pick. So that's a gigantic game. You have the Liverpool-Brighton game before it, and then you got Man City-Arsenal. Oh, baby. La Liga, Barcelona, Las Palmas. You have Girona taking on Real Betis, and Real Madrid, who will probably be league champions, host Athletic at the Bernabeu. Atletico travel to Villarreal. Serie A, Juve travel to Lazio to take on Sarri ball, even though Sarri's leaving. Did he leave already? I think he left already. AC Milan travel to Florence to play Fiorentina, and Inter host Empoli at the San Siro. Bundesliga action. Unbeaten Leverkusen and league leaders host Hoffenheim. Rebel Leipzig hosts Mainz. And then you have Der Klassiker, Bayern Munich, and Borussia Dortmund at the Allianz in Munich. Ligue 1, El Clasique, Le Classique. Marseille and PSG. All right. NFL rule changes. We start with the kickoff here. So quickly here, kind of stolen from the XFL. Kicking team will still kick the ball from the 35-yard line, but players on the kicking team will line up at the opponent's 40. These players cannot move, and the kicker cannot cross the 50 until the ball hits the ground or a receiving player in the landing zone, which is the goal line to the 20-yard line, or the end zone. The receiving team must have a minimum of 9 players lined up in the setup zone, which is between the 30 and 35-yard lines, with a maximum of 2 returners lined up in the landing zone. Any kick that hits the landing zone must be returned, while any kick that bounces into the end zone from the landing zone must either be returned or downed by a receiving team for a touchback to the 20-yard line. Any kick short of the landing zone gives possession to the receiving team at the 40-yard line. Any kick that hits the end zone and is down is a touchback to the 30. Any kick that goes out of the back of the end zone is also a touchback to the 30. No more fair catches. No onside kicks unless you're in the fourth quarter and the team is trailing and the current onside kicker rules apply. Kickoffs after safeties will be from the 20-yard line. Kicker will have the option to use a tee setup and landing zones will not change. Penalties that carry over to kickoffs would only impact the spot of the kick, not the setup or landing zones where players line up. So regardless, those are the lineup zones. Those are the landing zones. That's pretty interesting. And kind of stolen from the XFL, I think it keeps the kickoff in the game. It certainly revolutionizes it and changes it. So I'm glad it's still in the game. I'm glad we're not just starting the ball and eliminating a special teams play. We've changed a special teams play, so we'll see what happens. I'm going to give it a chance, and I've seen it in the XFL, and I think it's interesting where, it's going to take a little bit to get used to, but a lot of things take a little bit to get used to. So I think it's a necessary change because the kickoff play is an important play in the game, in the sport, but it's also a dangerous play. So if we can take some injury out of it, I'm fine with that. Now the next rule I'm more concerned about. Hip drop tackle is banned. If it is a foul, the player uses the following technique to bring a player to the ground. Grabs the runner with both hands and wraps the runner with both arms and unweights himself by swiveling, dropping his hips on lower body, landing and trapping on the lower leg. So I get it. I had my running back, Tony Pollard, break his leg on this in a playoff game. So I understand, like, it sucks, but how are you supposed to have these guys play defense? So if the guy gets by me, I'm not allowed to tackle him anymore? Or I got to hold on for dear life on a shoelace? Because if I grab him at the hips and try to bring him down by dropping my weight, that's a foul? Now you put this on the officials, by the way. Good luck. The officials in that league are horrendous to begin with. Now you give them this call. God bless. And again, I am for player safety. If we can make the game safer, let's do that. However, I think people are losing sight that it is a physical sport. There are injuries. You're never going to get an injury-free sport. That's not how it works. You have non-contact sports where there are injuries. Think about that. So, of course, you're going to have injuries in contact sports, especially one of the most physical sports there are out there. They have to wear helmets. They have to wear pads. Not every sport does that. Yes, some do for sure, but not everyone, and not to the level that football does. That's for damn sure. So the hip drop thing I'm a little worried about. Trade deadline will be 1 week later. I think that's great. Coaches get a third challenge if they win their first. Fine. I think that's great. They no longer have to win both. They just have to win one. So that's good. Enforcement of fouls on change of possession plays. During a play that result in a possession change, if fouls are committed by both teams, any major offensive foul like unnecessary roughness will be committed before the possession change will now be enforced. Interesting. Changes to replay. The replay assistant will now be allowed to correct objectively incorrect calls for intentional grounding and roughing the passer. Interesting. Replay review will be allowed when there is clear and obvious visual evidence that the game clock expired before any snap. Interesting. Ruling of a passer down by contact or out of bounds before throwing a ball. Throwing a passer now review in place. Also interesting. So I think those replay rules are good. I'm concerned about the hip drop, and I kind of like the kickoff, to be honest. So that's where I'm thinking. That's where my head's at with the new rules in the NFL, even though I'm not really thinking about football. All right. Golf, good Houston Open here. You got Scottie Scheffler there. Wyndham Clark apparently pulled his back, which I think that's a concern for a golfer, but he's going to play. And, like, the Masters is coming up, so wouldn't you want to rest? But, hey, I guess I'm wrong. You got Will Zalatoris, the Gala, Jason Day, Finau, Siwoo Kim also in the field. So that's the story at the Houston Open down there. I think it was the Valero Houston Open. It used to be, at least, right? I think it might be still. So that is the golf this weekend. You got a big weekend in sports here, and they're only going to get bigger because you got this Premier League running. You got Champions League knockout stages in the soccer world. Masters coming up to kick off major season, and we got the Sweet 16 Elite 8 this weekend and Final Four and National Championship next. So, big weekend. Everybody enjoy it. Enjoy the basketball. I'll talk to you next week. Until then,
peace.
Happy Easter.
Sometimes Other Sports Show. That's the name of it? Guys, check out his podcast. That sounds like my kind of podcast. Football, 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 and Sometimes Other Sports Show. Sounds like me.